Today's shir is Masechta Bava Basra, Daf Kuf Lamed Vav. We will begin on Daf Kuf Lamed Vav, Amid Aleph, at the Mishnah, at the top of the Amid. Our Mishnah, says the Rashbam and other Rishayim, is referring to a Bari. Unlike the previous sugyas that we've discussed, Shchimera, our Mishnah refers to a healthy person. And as the Rashbam explains, what this person in our Mishnah is trying to accomplish is as follows. We know, we've learned, that a person, a state, is mortgaged to his wife's ksuba. And therefore, if a person passes away, he has to leave, his wife gets supported off that estate until she decides to collect the ksuba. This husband did not want to have his estate support his wife. So what he did was, he wants to give all of his assets, all of his estate, to his son or sons as a gift that will be effective before he passes away, so that when he passes away, he no longer has an estate that his wife could make a claim for support from. However, on the other hand, the person recognizes that if he gives everything away from his estate, then he will be left with nothing. And from what will he live if he's given everything to his sons? So what he does is he makes the gift in the wording of Mahayoyim Ulachamisa, which means that the gift should be valid from the actual property itself, should become the property of a son from today, but the payrus that are produced by that property should remain his until Lachamisa. So he's accomplished both of his goals. He keeps the payrus, so he has what to live off, but he has no estate remaining after he passes away that his wife should be able to collect support from. He can't, obviously, explain the Rishonim, right, that all of this, that this should be a gift, that his entire estate should be a gift to his sons only after he passes away. For a gift cannot be valid lachar misa. And the Rishonim give two explanations why a gift cannot be valid lachar misa. One is that it's no longer his, because the moment he passes away, he becomes, the children that who are his yorshim become the owners of this property, and since they are now the owners of the property, it is not his to give away. That's one explanation given by the Rishonim. Another explanation given by the Rishonim is quite simple. A person who's not alive is unable to give gifts, to make transactions. So therefore, Lachamisa, where he's no longer alive, he's not able to make a gift. Actually, the Paiskim use this concept that I just mentioned to discuss a very interesting shaila. In our shiurim, we've discussed the halachic will, and that if one wants to make a will that will divide his estate not according to the laws of Yerusha, what he needs to do is give it as a gift. But that, again, since a gift can't be given lachamisa, the way the will should be written is that the gift is valid a moment before he passes away. However, just like we just said, that a person after he's no longer here is incapable of giving gifts, similarly, a person after he's no longer here, a person who's a geisus, we learned earlier in our Masechta, is unable to make gifts. So if a person writes a will that the gift should only be valid a moment before he dies, that's a moment that he's incapable of making gifts, because at that moment he's already a geisus, and a geisus can't give gifts. And therefore, suggest the Paiskim, what should be written rather is that the gift is valid a moment before he is no longer able to make transactions, a moment before he's mentally incapable of doing transactions. So says the Mishnah, as we learned, HaKos of Nechos of Labanov, if somebody writes over his assets to his sons, so if he wants, it should be effective that it, as a gift, but that he should be able to eat the payrus as long as he's still alive. Tzarech Shiyichtav, he has to write the language Om Hayoim Lachamisa, which we explained, Mahayoim means that from today the son becomes the owner of the property, Ulachamisa, and after he passes away, at that point the son, it becomes the owner of even the payrus. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi disagrees, and he says, Ein Tzarech, it's not necessary, and what's required according to him is only to write, according to him, it's only required to write Milachamisa. The word Mahayoim will not be necessary, and the Gemara will explain in Mitzvah Shem why. The Mefarshim asked the obvious question. If we just explained that a person after he's not here anymore is incapable of making transactions, and we're explaining whether you need to use the terminology of Mayoim Lachamisa or whether you don't, what happens here is that the payrus only become the father's after the father passes away. So we have a very fundamental question. How could the payrus become the son's Lachamisa if we said Lachamisa gifts can no longer be effective? So Rekiva Eger and Rebbe Chanan, to answer this question, explain that what happens is that it's not that the payrus only become the sons after the father passes away, which, as we've been explaining, is halachically impassable. Rather, what happens is that once the father passes away, the son becomes the owner of the payrus from the moment that the shtar mehayoyim, from the moment that the shtar was written. That's how Rabbi Chanan and Rabbi Kivega explained the Gemara. The Beis Meir explains differently. He says, absolutely, as we explained a couple of moments ago, the halacha is that one cannot make a transaction lachamisa. However, says the Beis Meir, that's only if no part of the transaction was begun while the person was still alive. But in a situation where the transaction already commenced, michayim, which is the case of our Mishnah, where the guf hakarka, the actual property, already became the son's while the father was still alive, and it's only the payrus that are going to now become the son's after the passing of the father, so that's not considered a kinyan lachamisa. It's only considered the completion of a kinyan that began michayim, and that is acceptable. So therefore, continues the Mishnah, hakos nchos l'bnoi lachamisa, if somebody writes such a transaction to the son, that now the son should become the owner of the property, lachamisa, the son should become the owner of the payrus, ha'av eni yochel limkor, the father can't sell the property completely, because he's no longer the owner of the actual property. The son is now the owner of those properties. On the other hand, haben eni yochel limkor, the son is unable to sell these properties, they're the property of the father. And as the Rambam says, because of this, l'chadchila, no sale should occur to this property, not by the father, nor by the son. However, macharav, if the father did sell the property, Mechurin at Shiyomis, they're considered sold until the father dies, because until then he is the owner of the Paris, and the Gemara will discuss this. Makra ben, and Lekech ben Klum at Shiyomis Av. If the son sold it, the purchaser doesn't have any rights to this property until the father passes away, because until the father passes away, the father is the owner of the Paris of this property. And of course, point out the Rishonim, the Ritva points out that if the customer, if the buyer of this property from the father was unaware of the father's limited ownership in this property, that his ownership is limited to the payris, not to the karka, and now he becomes aware of so, he could demand that the deal be nullified. However, points out the Rashba, what he can do is demand that the deal be nullified. What he cannot do, says the Rashba, is say that I want the deal to stand, but I want a refund for the amount, because the value of the deal is much less, given that I am now only have payers rights, not property rights. If he wants it to stand as is, fine. If he doesn't want it to stand as is, if he wants a refund, then the seller could say, I want to nullify the deal. Says the Gemara. Ask the Gemara, if the wording of Mahayoyim Lachamisa was written Mahavi, why is this considered effective? Hatnan, didn't we learn in a Mishnah Masechta Gittin, if somebody writes a get using the words Mahayoyim Lachamisa, get vein a get, we don't know if this should be considered a valid get or not a valid get, and therefore Vimeis, if he dies without any children, so we don't know if the get was valid and she's not a candidate that requires Yibum or Chalitza, or if she is, and therefore because we have a question regarding the validity of the get, the halach is Chaletzis V'lemis Yabemis, she only gets Chalitza, not Yibum, because we don't know what did the husband mean by saying Lachamisa. Did he mean to say that the get should have taken effect now but it's conditional upon his death? If that's what he meant, then the get is a valid get. It's a get with a tanai. Or did he mean to retract his previous statement? And if that, then the get is not valid, because he only wants the get to be effective after his death. And as we've learned, ain't get la chamisa. So we see that when we have a situation of mayoyim la chamisa, it's not an effective transfer. It's not an effective means of creating shtar. Ask the Mefarshim. We've learned many times throughout Shas the concept of Tfais Lashon Rishon, Tfais Lashon Achron. When we have two wordings that are sort of contradictory, what do we follow? The first wording or the second wording? So ask the Mefarshim, why don't we use the same concept over here to discuss and say, if you'll Tfais Lashon Rishon, we'll follow the word Mahayoyim. If you'll use Tfais Lashon Achron, we should say it's Lachamisa. So I actually saw two different answers in the Mefarshim to this question. One answer is that the only time we say Tfais Lashon Rishon and Tfais Lashon Achron is when the two statements contradict each other. Here, however, the two statements don't contradict each other. You could, as we explained, because Mahayoyim Lachamisa could mean that Lachamisa is only a condition. We only say that this is an issue of Tfais Lashon Rishon, Tfais Lashon Achron, when the two statements contradict each other. Another teretz that I saw, the Nefarshim suggest, is that the issue of Tfais Lashon Rishon and Tfais Lashon Achron is only an issue where there are two parties. However, as we know by a get, the halach is that a get can be given by karcha against the will of the wife, and therefore it's not considered as such. There we don't use the concept of Tfais Lashon Rishon, Tfais Lashon Achron. But again, the Gemara's question is, clearly from the Mishnah Masechta Megittin we see that using the words Mayoyim Lachamisa are ineffective. Why in our Mishnah are they effective? Answers the Gemara, Hasam Mesapkalon. There we don't know how to interpret the words, as we explain this statement. Is it Tanai Hava? Yechazor Hava. Does it just mean to make a condition, or does it mean a retraction. And therefore, because we don't know, we can't be sure if it is or isn't a valid get. Aval hacha, hach kamalei. In our Mishnah, it's clear that what his intention is, gufi konim hayoy, that the actual property itself becomes my son's from today, and the peril achemisim. The Yerushalmi asks, then why don't we say, then the case of Gittin, when he says meyoyim lachemisa, what he means is that the divorce should be effective today, but we know that the halacha, we learned this Gemara Masechta Ksubis, the halacha is that whatever a wife earns belongs to her husband. So what it means is that he's keeping for himself, that even though they're getting divorced, he's keeping for himself the right to her earnings. Answer to Yerushalmi, as explained by the Rishonim, the Rashba, the Ritva, that we know, we discussed the other day, there are two different concepts. There's a concept of shiur and there's a concept of tanai. Shiur means that if somebody writes a get, for example, and he writes that I'm divorcing you, but you may not marry a certain man, that's called shiur. And that creates a situation that the get is not a valid get. But if he makes the tanai, he says, I'm giving you a get on the condition you fulfill the following stipulation, the get is a get. Says the Yerushalmi, in a situation where a husband kept the rights to his wife's earnings, that's not considered a tanai in the get. That's considered a shiur. That is a situation where the separation between the husband and the wife is not considered a complete separation, and it certainly wouldn't be a valid get. So that's not how we could in any way interpret the meaning of Mahayoy Ulachamisa. Rav Yosef and Etzarach. So we learned in the Mishnah. Rav Yosef's opinion is that one doesn't have to write the words Mahayoy Ulachamisa. Rather, just writing Ulachamisa itself is adequate. Says the Gemara. Rabbi Barvu Cholosh. Rabbi Barvu got ill. Al Gabei Rav Huna Rav Nachman. Rav Huna Rav Nachman came to visit him. Amlai Rav Huna Rav Nachman. So Rav Huna said to Rav Nachman, Boy Minei, ask of Rabbi Bar Avua halach Rabbi Yosi and halach Rabbi Yosi. Does the halach follow the opinion of Rabbi Yosi or not? Amalei, so Rav Nachman said to Rav Huna, Tamad Rabbi Yosi lo yedana. I don't understand what Rabbi Yosi says. Halachi boy minei. So you want me to ask him what if the halach follows his opinion? Amalei, so Rav Huna said to Rav Nachman, At boy minei I halachi loy. You just ask him if the halach follows the opinion of Rabbi Yosi or not. Once he answers you, I'll be able to give you the answer. I'll give you the explanation for Rabbi Yossi's ruling. So he asked him, and Amalei Hachi Amarav Halach Rabbi Yossi. The halacha actually follows Rabbi Yosef. Boston Nafka. After they went out, Amalei had a time with Rabbi Yossi. This is the reason for Rabbi Yossi. Why? Don't you have to write the word Mahayoyim? Because manu shel shtar mechir chalov. The date in the shtar, the fact that a date is written in the shtar, is a clear indication that it wants it Mahayoyim. And therefore you don't have to write the word Mahayoyim. And Tanya nami hochi, Rabbi Yossi oimer ein etzorach, there is no need to write the word Mahayoyim. Neshiz manu shel shtar mechir chalov, the date in the shtar clearly indicates what that he meant Mahayoyim. Interesting, machlokes Rishonim. Rishonim discuss, nowadays, every document that's written has a date in it. So nowadays, where the date is always written, will we be able to follow Rabbi Yossi's ruling that Zmanu shel shtar mechir chalov? Or the date doesn't tell us anything, because every shtar has a date. So the Rashba says, that even nowadays, where every shtar has a date, we still could say Zvanish Shtar Mechir Chalav. Because the fact that the person who wrote the shtar didn't tell the people writing the shtar to exclude a date is an indication that he wants the date to serve a purpose, Zvanish Shtar Mechir Chalav. That is the opinion of the Rashba. The Ritva, however, disagrees. He says we only could say the concept of Zmanu shel shtar mechir chalov where the date was written when it isn't always necessarily written. But in a case like ours, where the date is always included, we can't use the concept as manish shtar mechichalav. And the question that, and this question the Paiskim discuss, is very relevant, because nowadays we know that there are people who may have left more than one will, and when caught, when Beis Din has to determine which will to follow, we follow the will with the latest date, suggest the Paiskim. So the date nowadays in a get, in a will, in a tzava, serves a very important purpose to recognize which is the valid tzava. Therefore, nowadays the halacha would be that we cannot rely on the concept of zman shtar mechichalav. Another interesting machlokes we shine him around this concept of zman shtar mechichalav is, we know, we've discussed many times, that there are different kinyonim, there are different situations where somebody makes a transaction with a stipulation that it should only be valid in 30 days. What would be the halacha if that was written into the document? Could we then say in such circumstances Zmanish Ashtar Mechichalov? Some Rishonim suggest, it seems that that's the opinion of the Rashbam, that then we couldn't use the concept of Zmanish Ashtar Mechichalov, because the date wasn't written to accomplish the same as the Mahayoyim accomplishes. Rather, the date was written because we need to know when the 30 days when we want the transaction to become valid begin. However, the Beis Yosef seems to say that if our entire goal is to know when the 30-day date is, that that's when this transaction should become valid, we could have listed that date when the day number 30 is. The fact that today's date is included in the shtar, we could still use the concept of Zman Shtar Mechichalav. Ask the Gemara. Boy Minai, because now Gemara is going to try to understand the parameters of the machloikis of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Bamnei Ravim Rav Nachum, Bakna Mahu. When the document actually records an acquisition, that it says that the Edom acquired this property on behalf of the recipient, what is the halacha? Will Rabbi Yehuda still require the words Mahayon? Amalei, so Rav Nachman said, Bakna, if it's that type of a document, ain't it tzarech? Because maybe he only requires it when the document itself is affecting the acquisition. But in a situation where the acquisition is being accomplished without the document, there Rabbi Yehuda will agree that Mahayoyim is not required. Rapapa doesn't agree so completely to Rav Nachman. He says, there's going to be a situation that even though there's an act of acquisition besides the shtar, that the halacha will be that you have to write mehayoyim, and there is a situation where it's not required. If at the beginning of the document, there is wording at the beginning of the document that says, acquire it, and at the end of the document, it says the kanina that we indeed acquired it. So why did it have to say it twice in the document? Why does it have to say at the beginning that the person giving the gift told them to acquire the property on behalf of the recipient, and that they at the end of the shtar say that they indeed acquired the property as instructed? The reason, the second point, seems to be superfluous. And it must be to teach us that it was mentioned twice to strengthen the recipient's rights, and therefore it affects that the acquisition happens immediately, and we don't need the word Mahayoyim. Leitzarech. Even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that the word Mahayoyim is not necessary to be inserted in the shtar. However, if the way it was written, Kanina Meneva Akne, at the beginning it's written we acquired, and at the end of the shtar, it's written that the giver told them to acquire it on behalf of the recipient, tzarech, then the word mehayoyim will be necessary, according to Yehuda. Because the document at the end had to mention the instruction for them to acquire it, because otherwise they would have no right to do what they did at what they to do what they said they did at the beginning of the shtar. Maskula Rav Chanina Mesura Mika Nida. This turns into being a very interesting situation, he asks. The Nan Lo Yedinin. We, the Rabbonim, don't know this distinction between the wording of the shtar. The Safri Yadi and the Safrim do know. So ask the Mefarshim, Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinman asked this in the Sefer Yael Sashachar. It has nothing to do with the cipher. It has to do with the person who's giving the instructions that to write the shtar. And the Edim, who are witnesses, why are we tying this all to the cipher? So answers the Yael Sashachar, a cipher is not allowed to write anything in the shtar different than the instruction that he's been given. And therefore, if the cipher saw that it was the intention of the person who's giving this field that it should be effective from today, he wrote it in the language of Akniv Kenanimene. If he saw that it was not the giver's intention to do so, he wrote the wording Kenanimene Akne. And therefore, legitimately asked the Gemara, are the cipherim such big Tamid Chachamim that they know this? Something that Rabbonim don't necessarily know. So says the Gemara, Shalinu l'safri d'abaya, they asked this question to the Seferim of Abaya, v'yadi, and they were indeed aware of this distinction between the wording. L'safri, the Rava, similarly they asked the question by the Seferim of Rava, and they too, v'yadi, were aware of this distinction. Says the Gemara, Rehuni b'rei d'vishu omer, ben akta b'kaninamenei, Ben Kaninim Neva Akne, it makes no difference in what order these words are written. Like Tzorich, even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that the words Mahayoyim don't have to be written. The only time we have a machloik between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi is where we don't have these words in the shtar, Kaninim Neva Akne. But if those words are in any order in the shtar, it's clear that even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that the transaction is valid mi'ayoyim. But now the Gemara says, Omer Rav Kahana, there's a different version of this discussion. Amrit l'shmatz kamedir azud min ha'adah, v'amalei, atan hachim es nisalon. You taught this Gemara in the following manner. However, anah hachim es nisalon. Omer Rav, Omer Rav Nachman, v'akna ein etzorach. Where the document records it, that there was a transaction, even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that you don't have to add the word mehayoyim. Ben akdeminei v'kaninaminei. Ben kaninaminei v'aknei. It makes no difference what word these words were used, in what order these words were written. Loit tzorach, Rabbi Yehuda will agree that you don't have to write the word mehayoyim. However, where do they disagree? B'duchim pesgam midav ma'amfa pligi, where the word, there's no mention of a kinyin, there Rabbi Yehuda will require the word mehayoyim. According to this version, Rava did not ask a question, rather he just stated the halacha. So we learned in the Mishnah, Hakayis of Nechas Labon of Lachem Isai, as somebody writes over his property to his son that it should be effective after his death. So the Mishnah said that if the son sold the property during his father's lifetime, the buyer has no rights to the produce until the father dies. What does this mean? It obviously means that the buyer doesn't become the full-fledged owner of the property. The buyer does become the full-fledged owner of the property when the father dies. Ask the Gemara, Itmar, why will be the halacha not that the father died and now the son, Baruch Hashem, is alive and the transaction becomes complete? But rather, Machar HaBen B'chaya Av. The son sold the property while the father was alive. And Meitz HaBen B'chaya Av. And the son died before the father. Amrab Yoichrat, Lekana Lekayach. Under such circumstances, the son doesn't, the buyer doesn't become the property, even when the father dies. Rishlakish says, Kana Lekayach, the buyer acquires the property. And the Rishonim debate, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that we just said, who becomes the owner? So the Rashbam's opinion is that if the son died before the father, and now the father passes away, the property goes to the Yorshei Ha'av. Tosfos' opinion is that it goes to the Yorshei HaBen. And in fact, in a variation of that opinion, that it goes to the Yorshei HaBen, I saw that it'll depend. If the Rabbeinu Yonah says, following the opinion of Tosfos, that it goes to the Yorshei HaBen, if this son will have left sons, will have left over sons in the world, so the property goes to his children, and because they have to continue and honor their father's transactions, it will ultimately go to the Lekeach. If, however, the son did not leave children, then it will not go to the Lekeach. Rav Yochanan Amar, and now the Gemara explains their machlokes. Rav Yochanan Amar, lekana lekeach. Rav Yochanan has the opinion that the buyer doesn't become the owner of the property when the son dies, because Rav Yochanan's opinion is that kinyan peiris ki kinyan aguftonin dami. The one who owns the rights to the produce is the real owner of the property. So since the father, as we explained in the Mishnah, is the owner of the produce of the property, therefore the halacha is that the sale that the son made while the father was the owner of the property was a meaningless sale. Whereas Rish Lakish are mekana lekeach, because Rish Lakish's opinion is kinyan peiris lafka kinyan aguftami. The ownership of only peiris is not considered true, is not considered owner, and therefore since the son was the owner of the actual property, the sale is considered a valid sale. I saw that the Sefer Teresh Yeshua explains al Pidrush, the machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish in the following manner. We know that Rish Lakish, when he was a young person, was a gazlan, and then he did tshuva. So Rish Lakish recognized that Olam Hazeh is really meaningless, and therefore Rish Lakish's opinion was that Kinyan Peiris, if you just have Peiris, Olam Hazeh is meaningless. Rabbi Yochanan, who never experienced anything but a life of Torah mitzvahs, he thought that Kinyan Peiris, that this world does represent ownership, because this is the world through which we could do, in which we could learn Torah and do mitzvahs to come to Olam Haba. As the Tzlach, the Torah teaches us, when it speaks about the mitzvah of Hakel, that everybody has to attend Hakel, took place every 7 years, and that the Pasuk says, V'gercha shebeshurecha. As the Tzlach, that the Gemara says, in Masechta Psachim, that somebody who doesn't own property in Eretz Yisrael is potter, is not obligated to attend Hakel, is not obligated to be Oil Rego. So since a Ger is not somebody who is a Jew for generations, and therefore he can't inherit property in Eretz Yisrael, so any property that he owns is only something that he's going to hold on to till Yovel, so why would a Ger be Chayiv in Hakel? Why would a Ger be Chayiv in Aliyah L'Regel? So if we follow the opinion of Rav Yochanan, the Kinyan Peiris K'Kinyan Aguf Dami, says the Tzlach, so even though the Ger is going to ultimately have to return this property by Yovel, but until Yovel he has a Kinyan Peiris in this property, that's enough to be considered an owner. But what are we going to do according to the opinion of Rish Lakish, that Kinyan Peiris Lafki Kinyan Aguf Dami? So the Tzlach comes up with the following scenario, which is a nice review of some of the halakhas that we learned in our perek. It'll be referring to a situation where a ger married a Jewish woman who was the Yoreshes, who inherited her father's property in Eretz Yisrael, and then his wife predeceased him, which we learned also in our perek, that a husband is the yorish of his wife, and that a ger has true ownership in property in Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, the machloikis, if a son sold this property that he only had a kinyan aguf in, and then he predeceased his father, will the sale be a valid sale after the father dies or not? Is based on the machloik, is based on a question of kinyan peiris ki kinyan aguf dami or not. Ask the Gemara v'afliga b'chad zimna. This is a machloikis that we've already encountered. Ditmer, hamoiches today l'peiris, if somebody sells his field for only for its produce, and we know that the halacha is that every year somebody had to bring, everybody had to bring bikurim, the first fruits of the Zayin Minim, to the Beis HaMikdash to give to the Kohen. And when he brought it, he would have to say the parasha of Mikra Bikurim, which says, Ate Vesis Reish Pri Adoma Asateli Hashem. So now the question is, if somebody only has ownership in a piece of property for Paris, does he say the parasha Mikra Bikurim or not? Rav Yochanan Amar, maybe Vikari. Because Kinyan Paris, Kinyan Aguf Dami. And he's considered the owner, that he has a full-fledged obligation of bringing Bikurim. Rish Lakish Amar, maybe Ve'en Vikari. And the Gemara explains. Rav Yochanan Amar, maybe Vikari. Because Rav Yochanan is of the opinion, Kasover, Kinyan Paris, Kinyan Aguf Dami. And therefore he's considered the full-fledged owner. Rish Lakish Amar, Rish Lakish however is of the opinion that maybe Ve'en Vikari. Because Rav Shlokish's opinion is Kinyan Paris Lavka Kinyan Aguf Dami, so he's not considered the full-fledged owner, and therefore he can't say the parasha. Ask the Rishonim, Taisus already asks, if we're saying that Kinyan Paris is Einik Kinyan Aguf, why does he have to bring Bikurim at all? It's not his property. So Taisus indeed says that the Chiv is only Midrabonon, and therefore the Rabbanan said to bring the Paris, but not read. Other Mepharshim give different Turutzim. Regarding the Kriya, the Torah says, Pri Hadoma Ashnasata Li. Li means that I have full ownership. And according to Rish Lakish, if all you have is Kinyan Paris, you don't have full ownership. Whereas regarding the obligation to bring the Bikurim, the Torah uses the words Ashatavi Ma'atzecha. And as soon as you have any connection to this property, you have the obligation to bring Bikurim. Another Teretz is regarding the obligation to bring Bikurim. The Torah says the word Bikurei Admatzecha. And as this is considered Admatzecha, whereas regarding the Chiv Kriya, the Torah says Hadoma Ashinasatali. Another Teretz that the Maram Shik says from his Rebbe, the Chassam Sofer, that when the Tosek uses the words Hadoma Ashinasatali, the person is speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives somebody a gift, the gift HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to a person is complete. And therefore, a person who doesn't have complete ownership in a property, he only has a Kinyan Paris, it's inappropriate that he should say the words, those words, because it isn't the type of gift that a Kodesh Baruch Hu gives to a person, it isn't complete, he only has a Kinyan Paris. So the Gemara's question again is, we already learned this machloikis of Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish by Bikurim. Why must this machlokes be repeated? Amlach Rav Yochanan. Rav says Rav Yochanan, Afagav, the Ba'alma Kinyan Peres Ki Kinyan Aguf Dami. Although, in general, the halacha is that I hold Kinyan Peres Ki Kinyan Aguf Dami, I still had to repeat this concept in our sugya, Hocha Itzrak. Kusaka Data Chamina. One would think, Abel Gaba Berei Achuli Achel, a father is more generous towards his son. And therefore, the right of the once since the beneficiary of the gift is somebody's own son, the father gives him ownership of the property completely, and he only holds on to a small right to the Paris. Therefore, the son's sale of the land would be valid even if he predeceased his father, because his father only held on to a small piece of the land, Kamash Malon. That's why Rabbi Yochanan had to teach us that here, the father's rights to the ownership of the produce is no different than anywhere else, and his right and his ownership is considered a full-fledged Kenyan Peiris that prevents the son from having any real ownership in this property. Rish Lakish tells you, Avga Ba'alma, I hold Kenyan Peiris, Lafke Kenyan Adoftami, Hach Itzrich. I still needed to tell this halacha here as well. When somebody gives away a property but retains the produce for himself, even when it comes to talk about a son, the ownership that he retains is considered ownership of the land, because since he, the father, was in the one that was in control of this gift, and when he kept the payers for himself, he didn't just keep the payers, he kept a lot more than normal. Kamash Malon. That's what Rish Lakish teaches us, that no, we say that the ownership of the father is no more than the typical Kenyan Paris, and the son is considered the owner of the property and that he has a right to sell it. And the Rishbam says that we could make the argument the other way also in arguing with Yochanan Rish Lakish. And the Mefarshim explained that what is the Rashbam trying to say in this vart? He's saying because the Gemara could have asked the question the other way around. We should only have the machloikis of Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish in our case, and we can learn from our case what will be the halacha by Bikurim. But according to the Rashbam's explanation, that the argument Rish Lakish makes, Rabbi Yochanan could have made, and the argument Rabbi Yochanan makes, Rish Lakish could have made, therefore we need to have this machlokes stated both in our sugya and in the sugya of Bikurim. Eisei Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan asked Rish Lakish in the following braisa. If somebody said, Nichasei Lach, somebody says, first my asset should go to you. Vachrecha, after you pass away, Yiresh Ploini, somebody else should get that property. Vachrov, and after that second person passes away, Yirish Ploini, a third person should get the property. So the halacha is Meis Rishon, when the first person dies, the first recipient dies, Kanasheni, the second person receives the assets. Meis Sheni, when the second person dies, Kanashlishi, the third person acquires them. However, if Meis Sheni B'chaya Rishon, if the second person died before during the first one's life, so we can't fulfill the instruction that were given, and therefore Yachsru Lenechas Miyarshirishin, the property remains by the first person, and therefore when he passes away, it doesn't go to the third person, rather goes to the Yarshim of the first person, because the person that gave the instructions was very clear. It has to go from number one to number two, and from number two to number three. If it never is able to go to number three, to number two, then number three will never get it. Now ask Rabbi Yochanan his question. Vim Isa, if you are correct that Kenyan Paris is Navka Kenyan Aguftami, let's understand this case. The first recipient of this estate doesn't have more than Kenyan Paris, because he's only holding on to it until he passes away. Yet our Gemara is teaching us that it's considered his, and it goes back to him. But if all you have is a Kenyan Paris, it shouldn't go back to him after he dies and the second person is no longer alive. Rather, the Yarshirish, nice of me, it should go back to the original donor's Yarshim. Amalei, so Rish Lakish responds to Rabbi Yochanan, Kfa Tigmer of Oishim Abavol, Achrecha Shani. When the words after you, Achrecha, were used, it means not that the first person only had a Kenyan Paris. What it means is that he has a complete Kenyan. He has even a Kenyan Haguf. but it's a temporary kinyan aguf. It's only a kinyan aguf until he passes away. But while he's alive, it's completely his, and therefore this is not a situation of kinyan peiris where he has limited ownership. And became Rami Rav Barafuna Kamei the Rav. Rav Barafuna asked a similar question to Rav, and he gave the same teretz, Achrecha Shani. When the words Achrecha were used, what it meant was that the first person, the first recipient, has full ownership until he dies, and therefore, if we can't fulfill the instructions of the original donor, because the second person is no longer alive when the first person passes away, so the instructions can't be followed that you go from number 1 to number 2 to number 3, it will go to the yorshim of the first recipient, not to the yorshim of the original donor.